Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. On this weekend show, we're starting off taking a more macro look at recent economic data out of the U.S., the markets, how they continue to push higher, but it is on much more narrow breadth, and tying that all together in the back half of the show, more technical comments from one of our local fund managers who's trading these markets, get his insights on what momentum he is still playing. To kick off the show, we are chatting with Peter Buchvar, Chief Investment Officer at Bleakley Financial Group, also editor of the Book Report on Substack. I'll post a link in the show notes to Peter's Book Report. Now, Peter, let's start off with just a high-level look at recent economic data out of the U.S. We talked a lot about it throughout the week and more even so last week. Just the fact that the U.S. economic data, it is slowing. Now the debate being, is it in contraction or are we still just in this slow growth environment for the U.S.? What have been some of the standout data points to you that have really driven home the fact that, look, the economy just isn't booming as much as it was in the last couple of years?
I find the U.S. economy, and the global economy for that matter, hugely mixed and uneven. You take within the U.S. economy, you take the consumer, for example, and you can certainly bifurcate the behavior of the U.S. consumer. You have the upper income consumer that has handled the inflation and spending money just fine, whether it's because they're collecting 5% interest income on their savings, or they own stocks that are at a record high, or you have boomers that are benefiting in particular from those factors and retired and going on vacations and cruising like there's no tomorrow. And then you have the lower to middle income consumer that feels the cumulative rise of inflation of around 20% over the last couple of years, even though they have seen wage growth. But that cumulative rise has pinched their pennies. And you're seeing that and hearing that from a variety of different retailers over the last couple months when we got earnings. I'd like to give a few different examples of comments. The Walmart CFO for multiple quarters now has used the word choiceful when describing the U.S. consumer. Casey's General Store, which is a convenience store operator in the U.S., similar to 7-Eleven, they talked about their lower income consumer. Their higher income consumer is doing just fine, but their lower income consumer is using fountain soda instead of going to the fridge to get a bottle or can of soda. And when you're trying to save 25 cents or 50 cents on your beverage, it tells you that you're really on a strict budget. And I think that was sort of eye-opening. Now, that also joined other companies in retail space that talked about a stretched consumer, but also you have where consumers spent their money during COVID and on stuff and less so on experiential type stuff. But now they're spending it on those experiences, but in a discriminating way. Prior to the start in this interview, we talked about, I went to the Sphere a couple weeks ago, and you wouldn't know that there was any hesitancy on the part of the consumer when it came to going to see a concert there, because the place was packed and tickets were $300 to $400 US if you include all the fees. That was face value. So that was pretty expensive for a ticket. So it's really, like I said, incredibly mixed. And even other parts of the economy, you have U.S. manufacturing that's been in a recession for almost 2 years, but the same can be said for manufacturing around the world. Part of that is, again, the shift in spending habits, but also inventory levels that have gotten right-sized. You have global trade that is sort of meandering along with not much upside. You have the housing market, which is seeing overall better business on the new build side, but 30-year lows on the existing home sale transaction side. Government spending has obviously been tremendous, and that sort of overflows in a lot of different areas, particularly healthcare, Social Security payments that have benefited from the rise in inflation and the cost of living adjustment increases, the defense spending, and a lot of interest income. So whoever's lending money to the government is loving the current rate of interest expense or interest rates. Then you have obviously distress in commercial real estate. So there's just, for every potential plus sign, I see a negative sign. And I think when you add it all together, and something that I've been saying for a while now this year is, it just feels like a 1.5% type economy. And we got 1.3% GDP growth in Q1, even though the personal spending side was okay, but still 1.3% GDP growth. And so far, the estimates for Q2 that we just finished up, the Atlanta Fed, which is a pretty timely calculation of it, is down to 1.5%. And like I said, that's the economy it feels like we're in. It's not robust. It's not a recession. It's kind of this lackluster, sluggish pace of activity that, from a trajectory standpoint, continues to slow. And then one thing I'll add on is the labor market, where we saw in the U.S. the recent June payroll number. And if you include the downward revisions, it was weaker than expected. And the trajectory of the unemployment rate has risen to the highest level since November 2021. While on an absolute basis, it's still low, the trajectory is what we have to most pay attention to right now. So all this leads to heightened expectations. The Fed is going to cut interest rates in September. But while psychologically that may help the stock market, from an economic standpoint, I don't think it's going to really make much of a difference. And the Fed still is playing a dangerous game here with taking their foot off the neck of inflation too soon. And there are a few different things that are complicating their decision-making, whether it's oil above $80, whether it's container prices that have skyrocketed. So it's interesting landscape right now.
Well, Peter, I'd like to talk on that last string you just pointed out about the anticipated Fed rate cuts, whether they'll be good or bad for the market, because historically, once the Fed starts a rate cutting cycle, it's typically because there's some pressure in the economy that's forcing them to do that. But it's also something that causes the stock market to top out shortly thereafter and then sell off. So there's a lot of people that got very animated about the upcoming rate cuts all year long. Really, they were animated about it at the end of last year. And if they do come one or two cuts, I don't know that one or two cuts makes a big difference, as you say, but what do you think will happen to the general markets in a rate cutting environment if it's because some of this mixed data just tips a little bit further into the weak side as inflation is staying high? It's kind of a weird mixed bag that the Fed has to navigate here.
Well, it's a difficult dance that they haven't had to do in a long time. The Fed had license to experiment with all different types of monetary policy, including the crazy idea of negative interest rates, because inflation was low. And while the trajectory of inflation right now continues to slow, and I think that at least on the service side will moderate further, as I mentioned with shipping prices, you can see goods prices that inflect up again, and all this complicating the Fed's job, because Jay Powell does know the lessons of the 70s, and he has Paul Volcker's book in his office and knows that what an embarrassment that would be if he got too cute with rates. But as you said, we could be in a difficult situation where he wants to cut rates more aggressively because the unemployment rate goes up further from here. But on the other hand, an inflation that was remaining, while slower than it was, still rather persistently above their 2% target. Now, one thing that sort of adds to the interesting dynamic here is always there's this 100 basis point, give or take, differential between CPI and PCE. And with PCE being currently at about 2.5%, we're going to see CPI for June soon. That'll be about 3.5%, give or take. And the Fed conveniently focuses on the smaller number, the PCE, but there's a big difference in the calculations, particularly in housing and healthcare. So the Fed may drive monetary policy based on what that smaller number is, in a sense, maybe fooling them into thinking that their inflation battle is won. Because I argue that seeing inflation spike, seeing it come back down again, the drop down is not the winning the war. It's inflation staying down is what wins the war. And right now, we're only on the downside of that inflation fight. We haven't seen, and the keyword being sustainable, rate of inflation at around 2%. I think we settle out at something like 3 to 4, which again complicates the Fed's ability to combat any further economic weakness from here. So it's not going to be your rate cutting cycle that saves the day that we got so used to for many decades. This one's going to be a lot more complicated.
So, Peter, tying this into markets and on the market front, let's say we get 100 basis points of cuts 2 years out or a year out from now, or even 200 basis points of cuts. We do go down to, let's say, a 3% level. does that bring money out of the money markets into the markets? And on the business side of things, does it spur any sort of capital investment, any sort of growth focuses?
I think that on the money market side, a lot of that money market money is just from savings accounts. It was basically still zero deposits that said, I'm tired of getting nothing from the bank who refuses to raise interest rates, and they put it into money markets. So I'm not convinced that the money market funds that are there are really going to be dedicated to buying stocks. And keep in mind, for every dollar that comes into the stock market, there's a dollar that comes out. As that for every buyer, there's a seller. So I think that, and even if, let's just say the Fed got really aggressive and cut 150 basis points, okay, we would still be at 4%. That's a far cry from zero. And is 4% going to really move the needle here? Maybe it takes some of the edge off, way over levered. Maybe it takes the edge off of that real estate landlord that needs to refinance. But I don't know if it's going to spur this big CapEx cycle or really save the day when it comes to a lot of the refinancing that needs to take place, because 4%, a lot of the debt coming due was priced in a zero rate environment. And even 4% rate environment as the sort of the starting point is still going to be painful for many.
Well, Peter, also thinking about the markets, you already alluded to it earlier in this call that you're going to be looking at the quarterly reports, and you often jump on a lot of these calls or get the summaries or sit through them and take notes and talk about it in the book report. What trends will you be looking for, or what kind of guidance will you be listening for when you go through the Q2 earnings report? Because we just finished up Q2 and we're going to start having those pour in over the next couple of weeks.
So what I'm most focused on is sort of, well, in addition to just getting a sense of the economy, hearing from the so-called horse's mouth at being the corporate world, is I feel like we need to reconcile the equity market performance between the small mid-cap stocks that can't get out of their own way with the behavior of the big stocks. And I like to say that we all breathe the same economic air, and the market's acting like the big names, big tech names, breathe different air. Now, putting aside the AI infrastructure build out, which is specifically helping the sort of providers and picks and shovels into that, such as NVIDIA and AMD and Broadcom, all the names we already know. What's the business like for Instagram, Facebook, owned by Meta, and Google, for example, since a lot of their customers are small, medium-sized businesses? Well, the Russell 2000 is down on the year, but can Google's business still remain robust in the face of that? Who's right? Is Google stock right? Or is the weak performance in these small cap stocks better reflection of their business, which would then flow into how much money they spend with these big names? I mean, Microsoft benefits with robust job growth because the more hiring goes on, the more Office 365 suites they're going to sell, or more Copilot subscriptions they might sell. If job growth slows, that will then impact their growth as well. Take Apple, for example. And I talked about the stretched consumer. Well, is that stretched consumer going to quickly upgrade to the new Apple iPhone that gives them Apple intelligence, just because Siri can answer a question a little better than it did before, and maybe they can post more advanced emojis? I'm not so sure. If they can barely cover their cost of living, are they going to be so quick to just upgrade their phone? So I feel like we need some fundamental reconciliation here between these two parts of the economy and seemingly two parts of the stock market.
So Peter, from the investment side of things, are we back in a scenario here, if we do get lower rates, if the trend for rates is lower, where investors feel like there is no other alternative but to put money into the market, even if it is, as people have said, that these big tech stocks are defensive in nature, even if their numbers start to come down? Do you think investors feel squeezed, that where else are they supposed to put their money?
Well, fortunate for them, it isn't as urgent a decision to make when rates are at zero. But when rates are at 5% and you can clip that coupon risk-free, that's pretty attractive. So I think that you really need to have a pretty alluring investment opportunity in order to take that money out of that risk-free attractive rate and put it in the stock market. Now, yeah, the S&P 500 is up 16% this year, but we know that's driven by a few select names. And the risk that you have to take to capture that is much higher than people think. People think I'm buying the S&P 500, I'm getting this diverse set of stocks in my portfolio. But instead, you're getting this very highly concentrated portfolio that's in just a few names mostly, and those names are extraordinarily valued. So there are options now, unlike before.
Well, Peter, just to that point, do you think that there's a false sense of security in the markets right now because so much of it is weighted to the mega cap tech stocks, and that the average stock picker hasn't fared nearly as well as like a passive index investor? Do you think that will encourage people to maybe become stock pickers, be less passive, and start trying to scalp some deals with some of the smaller cap stocks that haven't performed as much? Or do you think it actually puts more fire into just being a passive investor and just only playing the indexes moving forward?
I have friends of mine that have never bought a stock in their entire life ask me what I think about NVIDIA. And it just reminds me of the late 1990s. And NVIDIA's, we know what a success story it's been. But when you reach the point where you get these non-professionals that aren't investing in the markets, interested in the stock, really just because it's going up and they hear about the AI excitement. The AI thing is that they're benefiting from all the spend. What we don't know yet is what is the return on that spend. And that remains to be seen. I mean, right now for the big companies that are customers of NVIDIA, all this is a large expense on their income statement and will be for a long time if they capitalize this expense in terms of depreciation expense. At some point, at some quarter, it's okay, you guys are spending all this money, but where's the return on this investment? Where's the revenue streams coming from? Is this a product or is this just a tool that people are going to use? Where all this, where you just can't even think that all this money being spent is going to drive an acceptable return.
Yeah, it's going to be so interesting to see just how AI plays out. But hey, at least these tech companies have a lot of money right now, so I guess they can allocate it that direction. Let's switch focus and just chat about gold, precious metals broadly. They've been consistently doing quite well, holding up at generally higher levels, gold at pretty much historically high levels. The stocks, some of the majors have done pretty well. The mid-tiers have done pretty well. It's not at all clear for all the underlying stocks, though, but do you think Q2, maybe the earnings out of the majors changes some of the analysis, brings more people into the underlying precious metals equities?
Well, if you look at the price of gold, obviously this year we've done pretty well. And even if you look at what gold has done since the end of Q1, the price of gold is up about $100. So assuming your costs are not up $100 too, you should see a pretty good quarterly result season for Q2 for a lot of these companies. I mean, and also the price of gold is up a lot more than the miners. So you'd think that it would be the reverse, and it hasn't been the case. I mean, I think the problem that the miners have, number one, we know central banks have been the main buyer of gold, and they're buying physical, not the miners. And we know people have PTSD from owning gold stocks over the last few decades. And they haven't been the best stewards of capital, and the cost side of their income statement has risen far and above what any of us really estimated. So I think a lot of investors, when they get hit on the head just so many times, it's hard to think that they're going to come back. But that said, I think we're entering a situation where we can see some serious profit margin expansion that may finally get rewarded by investors.
In the environment, Peter, that the general markets correct some when the rate cutting cycle does get underway, because historically that is what happens, would you expect gold and the gold miners to potentially diverge as a store of value? Or would you expect a prolonged correction to suck gold and the gold miners down with it?
It's a good question. I want to believe and hope that the market will differentiate between those businesses that are going to get negatively affected by an economic downturn from potentially gold that may respond even more favorably to a rate cutting cycle that would then not only benefit the price, but of course the producers that produce it. And that you could see a bifurcation in the market, just as you had for this whole time where stock prices over the last couple of years have outperformed in the miners. So I hope you can see that.
Yeah, good point there, Peter. In terms of, I guess, just looking ahead then, any other opportunities you're seeing in the market in this environment where, yes, we should get rate cuts, but rate cuts aren't necessarily a good thing?
Well, that's an important point, because we know historically when the Fed is cutting interest rates, it's in response to a recession or an oncoming one. And even if we do get the rate cuts, as we talked about earlier, because of persistent inflation, this is not going to be your normal rate cutting cycle where the Fed has license to do whatever they want to respond to any economic downturn. So I think initially the Fed is going to make it seem like a tweak, just as the ECB did. And you can call it a hawkish cut. People like to put terms on it. And I think that's what we can see. Now, if all of a sudden the unemployment rate is 4.3, 4.5, 4.75, 5, whatever, and starts really moving up, the Fed's going to have some more difficult decisions to make. But like I said earlier, Powell doesn't want to preside over a recession. He doesn't want to overstay his welcome with tight money. But on the other hand, he's deathly afraid of seeing inflation accelerate again if he starts cutting rates too much.
Always great chatting with you. I love reading over all the content you put out at the Book Report, which again, I will post a link in the show notes so all of you can follow along with Peter. It's multiple articles a day breaking down the key data points, earnings calls, market moves, all that you need to know when you're looking at the economy and at the market. Peter, great having you back on the show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, guys. Always fun chatting with you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.